Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity, and I want to thank you for joining us for this 30th episode. And this 30th episode is the last one of the decade. And it's the last episode of 2019. So just think about that for a minute, you know, that we're wrapping up a decade, you know, which is 10 years for anyone who doesn't know what that is. And it's pretty crazy to think that another 10 years has gone by so fast. And, you know, when you're getting close to 40, it's scary because it means I'm getting even closer to 40. And I'm going to be searching high and low for a time machine to go backwards because I'm not ready. But I guess I have a little bit of time. But, yep, this is episode 30. And I wanted to make it special, but it's probably not going to be special because, you know, you don't always get what you want. Stop crying about it. No, just kidding. Okay, so this is actually going to be an inspiring episode. And it's going to be an inspiring episode because I feel like this is kind of a summary of all the episodes that have come before this in some fashion, kind of pulling stuff together, wrapping a bow on it because it's, you know, around Christmas and you put bows on stuff around Christmas. You know, it's actually a couple days after Christmas and a couple days before New Year's. But I really felt that for a 30th episode, you know, I don't know, it's some kind of a milestone in some universe. To me, it means I've done 30 of these things, and I'm surprised, I guess. And I think this episode, the reason why I think it's going to be good is because the way it's wrapping stuff up, and I'm going to title this How to Find Success, because I think if you took a lot of the individual episode takeaways, you know, the points that I was making in some of those episodes, you know, the ones that weren't just kind of random knowledge type episodes, but the ones that were talking about specific things to help improve yourself or your life, I think this is going to be where I can kind of tie these things together and make a point, a grander point, you know, about how this stuff can be leveraged to find success. And I think it's going to be a reminder of how easy it is actually for you to actually find success. And, you know, setting expectations a little bit lower could actually be helpful, because sometimes I think people feel they've dreamed up a certain type of success and they feel like they've failed because they didn't reach that type of success. But yet, if you really stepped back and evaluated what you did up to that point, you probably had actually become successful in something, you know. So that's what I'm going to cover in this episode, and I hope you enjoy it. And at least if you don't enjoy it, you can think to yourself, well, it's the last time I have to hear from this guy this year, or even this decade. Until next year, then I have to listen to him again. But you know, it's a choice. And you're making a choice to listen to me. And I hope it's you find value in it. But I'll stop the jibber-jabbering, and I'll get right to the point and show and tell and expose the secrets of success. Yes, this is an episode that will expose the secrets of becoming successful, like 50,000 self-help books out there failed to do. and I figured out the secret, and I'm going to give it to you right here, right now, on Finding Your Identity. So hang tight. After the break, you will be enlightened. It's about the little wins, I think, is the biggest takeaway. You have to look at little wins as success, you know? So, for example, graduating high school, right, could be considered a little win. And a lot of people would look at it and go, well, yeah, but that's not graduating from college. Or graduating from college isn't getting your master's degree, you know, or getting your master's degree isn't getting your doctorate, whatever, right? Like, if you constantly kind of pull back on the little successes and consider them not the end goal, and you think of them as not actually achieving what you set out to achieve, and you don't consider yourself successful, then you're not going to feel successful. Like, that, you know, bottom line is you have to consider that you're successful with these little wins, you know, and these little accomplishments and these little successes. You have to consider that that's success in itself. You know, I mean, if you consider getting married or having children, you know, those things are successes. And I think a lot of times it could just be that you don't feel like you reached your actual goal in life that you set. And, you know, to start, you really shouldn't have just one goal in life, you know, because if all you do is put your heart or have your heart set on one thing and then you don't achieve it, you're kind of setting yourself up for disappointment. Not to say that it's not important to have a little asterisk next to that goal as the ultimate goal, you know, but it's got to be something that you can look to measure success. You know, you got to consider in the business world with companies, you know, they're essentially, they're setting goals, multiple goals throughout the year or throughout a series of years, like 5 years or whatever, you know. Like, a lot of times you hear the term like 5-year plan, you know, because year one might be become profitable, right, at the end of year one. So meaning you're going to start producing whatever, operating your business, and you're at a loss. So some people might consider that not success because you're operating at a loss, which means you're not making any money. You're living off of your funding. So you borrowed money from somewhere and you're living off of that, and you're not actually making any kind of return on that investment, especially if it's for investors in the company. That's, people are going to be like, what the heck? You know, like, I want to make my money back. I just gave you $100,000 and I, you know, and if you're not making any profits, how are you going to pay me back? Right. But the small success there is that you actually have a product that people are buying, right? So you're selling something, let's just say, for sake of argument, you're selling a product, and, you know, in year one, you're getting sales so that you're bringing in revenue, but you're not necessarily making a profit because obviously you got to pay for the materials, the process, the workers, you know, all that stuff has to come out of somewhere. So after you pay all those expenses and you know, deduct that from what you made in revenue, you might not have any money left over, right? So you're operating at a loss, right? But the fact is you've got a product that people want. So that's a success in itself. So year one could just be, let's focus on marketing, let's focus on, you know, cutting distribution costs or negotiating better deals with the manufacturing company or whatever, you know, reduce the cost of the parts to make stuff. So, you know, in this business analogy, you're trying to figure out how to become profitable, you know, but you set the goal, right? And let's just say, you know, at the end of the year, you're still at a loss, right? But you're a lot closer because, you know, maybe you're only like operating at like a 10% loss versus a 50% loss or something like that. So that means, you know, you're just 10%. You just need 10% more somewhere to actually break even, right? And then 15% to become profitable. And you set that goal, and let's just say you get to the end of the year and that doesn't work out, but, you know, you had a five-year plan to begin with. And you say, in 5 years, I want to have a 30% return, right? Profit. So I want my profits to be 30% or something like that. I don't know. But whatever it is, you want to have money left over after everything. And you gave yourself 5 years to do it. And within that first year, you're only at a 10% loss. Like, you're really close. You know, if you think about it, like, this, you got to increase sales. You know, maybe you do have to cut costs like a little bit more or something like that, right? But you're still successful, and you still got money in the bank from what you borrowed, and you're okay, you know. But it's like, you basically got to track these things as little successes, right? Getting to that minus 10% of a break even, right? Like, is a success. And, you know, year two comes around and you surpass the expectation, because maybe you thought, you know, I want to become profitable, but your expectation after year one of profitable was, you know, I just want to be like 5% over profit, you know, over break even, right? And that was kind of your goal. And let's say, you know, you may have been 10% short, but then, you know, halfway through year two, you're actually at 10% over, you know, so you're actually making 10% of a profit, and your goal was 5, right? You can kind of jot that down or chalk that up to being a great success, because it exceeded what you had expected, you know. And I used to, you know, be big into trying to play the stock market, and, you know, I used to read like a lot of, you know, the different stock books or stock perspectives. You know, Jim Cramer was a big influence, and like Warren Buffett, you know, the Buffett way, right, were the two books I could think of. And then, like, I even had an Investing for Dummies book, but a lot of them taught a lot of the same kind of principles. You know, dollar cost averaging ended up being, to me, the big winner. I think it's always been successful and will continue to be successful. And that's basically investing the same amount of money on a regular basis, regardless of the level, like whether it's up or down, just consistently just keep investing in something you believe in. You know, and I still kind of stand by that, because I don't think it's I don't think it's something you should just completely ignore what you're investing in. You can make the adjustments, but if you're always contributing the same amount, you know, you're going to find success in investing that way. And I kind of subscribe to that principle. But, you know, one of the things, and I obviously get sidetracked and go on tangents, but one of the things I wanted to mention about that was the concept of this U-pod, that just reminded me of with investing is, you know, and it's not just investing, it's general in life, but under promise, over deliver. So UPOD. And I think it's actually kind of critical. I've kind of followed this as a mantra of my own for forever, you know, ever since I kind of learned about the term back in like high school. But I don't like to kind of go out and brag about what I'm gonna do. Like, I'd rather just present what I've done, you know. So I like the idea of kind of saying, hey, you know, I think I can make a business and I could break even in the first year. You know, I might make a profit in the second year. But, you know, I want to give myself about 5 years, you know, which I think is conservative. And, you know, that being said, to me, it's kind of in the back of my mind, though, I'm really shooting for profitability after year one. And by year two, I want to be at like a 15% profit margin. I really want to be successful with it. But I kind of am under promising to maybe the investors or even, you know, out loud that's the goal, because I want to basically under promise and then I want to over deliver on that promise, you know? And I find that sometimes that's how I kind of operate. And I think a lot of times I just don't necessarily say out loud what my real goal is, because I don't want to overpromise something, you know, like I want to underpromise it. But it's, that's the thing is if you kind of operate with this idea of underpromising, like you're going to actually be able to achieve, you know, little successes a lot quicker, in my opinion, because it feels like it's one of those things that, you know, I want to run a 5K, right, in a year. And I tell people that, and I set that as my goal, but I'm prepping, or I'm like preparing as if I'm going to try to compete in a 10K, right? Because I want to be more than ready to accomplish something, you know, I'll often think that, like, you know, if you're studying for a test, you it's better to be over prepared, you know, but sometimes you don't have a lot of time. But if you can be operating off the idea that the entire time that you're in like a class or a course that you're really prepping for that test, you know, you're consuming little bits of knowledge along the way, right? Like, so, you know, and you're completing quizzes and papers and assignments or whatever. And, you know, those are little successes that are your ultimate success is passing the big exam, right? And I think that if you kind of step back and have that kind of perspective of taking a test, a big test, but in the preparation leading up to it. Now, there are some tests that are just like, you got to study and then you got to take a test and you don't have anything in between, you know, where you don't necessarily have a course. And I kind of hate those kind of tests, but they exist. You know, I think of, you know, sometimes like certifications for certain things. Like, I mean, you could take courses to actually prepare yourself for a certification. Yes. But I do think sometimes you got, you know, sometimes it's not that simple. They might not actually be a class. It might not be financially feasible, whatever it is. And you got to kind of prepare for that test. But, you know, and this is obviously off on another tangent, but like sometimes it's just a matter of how you kind of prepare yourself for that. You know, like how do you structure your goals in terms of trying to achieve passing that big test, you know, without any help from anybody else. If you're self-taught or you're teaching yourself something, some kind of skill in order to try to pass some certification test or what have you, you know, it would be helpful for you to kind of lay out ahead of time. And I kind of leads me into what I want to consider my like first step towards finding success. TM. I, you know, throw TM after it. It makes it seem important. But I think step one, make lists. Okay. So that's what I'm going to say is step one, because I made a list of the things I wanted to talk about in this episode as in terms of what's number one for, you know, finding success. And that is the first thing I have on my list. It's making lists, because I thought to myself, I want to be successful in doing an episode about helping people find success. What should I do? Maybe I should make a list. And it's like, you know, a simple bulleted list of headlines topic headlines, like, you know, words that I kind of put out there concepts is what I'm trying to say. Concepts that I'm thinking I want to cover, right? So, you know, first one with make lists is it's just a simple, write it down, you know, write down what your goal is first, you know, like at the heading of your list is, you know, steps I will take to pass this certification test in 2 months. Boom. Okay. So you've started your list. Step one, get the materials required to study. Okay, so it could just be that you need to order a special textbook, or you need to go online and find the resources. Maybe you got to print them out, you know, get an ebook, whatever it is. You got to find some way that you're gonna consume those things, right? So it starts, you know, by kind of listing it out. So you know that's the first step. I need to gather my materials. And, you know, the second step is going to be devising some kind of timeline or time frame between now and the test for studying and figuring out how you're going to kind of measure your success as you get close to the test. Some of these, you know, tests for certifications are $500, $1,000. You know, you don't want to waste the money. And some of them, you're only allowed to take retake a test like once or something like that, right? So I'm thinking like these are certifications that, you know, in the tech industry with tech stuff, you know, maybe it's like an A+ certification or C+, I don't know, C+ certification, whatever these certifications are, you only potentially can only take, you know, take it once or twice. A lot of times it's at least twice, but it might be if you don't pass it twice, you got to wait an entire year. I think the real estate license exam, at least in Connecticut, is I think you get to take it twice. And if you don't pass it, you have to wait a whole year. You might even have to go through the course again, you know, which was like $1,000 for the course. And it's like $300 for the test or something like that. So you want to make sure that you can be successful. And I think this is where, you know, the little wins kind of can come into play, because you could devise a plan for how you're going to test yourself. How are you going to measure your success? So, you know, you're going to kind of set aside an hour a day to read a chapter. Maybe, you know, if it's a good course book, it'll actually have quizzes built into the chapters. You know, there may even be a practice exam at the end of the book or online or whatever. You might be able to find a practice exam. So there's kind of two schools of thought that I have on this. You know, one is I like to sometimes, if I feel like I've got a good grasp of something, of the concepts of whatever I'm talking, I like to take the practice exam. And it's kind of a good way to know where you measure up against the, you know, against the actual exam and your collection of knowledge, you know. So you might take the tests, the practice exam and get a, you know, 50%, and you're kind of like, well, that sucks, you know, I got an F basically. But you got to look at it as, well, you actually knew 50% of the answers without studying, really, you know, and without studying the specific course material. So you might actually, that's a little bit of a success there. I think you can actually consider that a win in a sense in my book. And so, you know, if it's a good practice exam, it'll actually tell you where you got things wrong. You know, it might even give you hints at to where to kind of go find the next set of the answers to the question you got wrong, or how to study to prepare better prepare for that question. You know, a lot of times these questions are kind of convoluted, you know, but they're meant to make you do some critical thinking, and, you know, they're not necessarily just a multiple choice where you could pretty much guess and you know, really get 50%. Well, I guess it is, or if it's multiple choice and it's for multiple choice, then it's like a 25% chance that if you guess, you're going to get it right. But what I'm saying is, like, sometimes these, they're multiple choices that are straightforward, like choose which one of these things is the thing, right? But then a lot of times these exams are like, choose the thing that it's not, right? So then it's like you have to actually evaluate all the other three things to find out, are they really the thing that is right, versus evaluating the four and finding the one thing that is wrong, you know, which is kind of, if that makes any sense, like I find harder when you actually have to choose the one that is wrong, when the other ones could sound like they're not exactly right, but they have to be right. So anyways, that could be part of your initial list and steps, right? So that the whole preparation, right? So you're making this list and it's preparation. It's, you know, how I'm going to acquire materials, how much time am I going to set aside for each week or day or whatever between now and the test, and how am I going to measure my success? You know, maybe you need on there, like, how am I going to pay for the test? You know, like, these are all things that you can check off. I actually have a coworker who loves to check things off, but checking off a list is satisfying. And you can see why, like, this, my coworker, she loves checking stuff off. And I think it's because, you know, when you're goal oriented, it feels like little wins, like a checklist of 10 things can be so satisfying when you check off even just one or two things. And then when you actually check everything off, you're just feeling like, wow, like I'm measuring success. Even if this is on paper and has no actual meaning in the real world, like, you know, checking the box doesn't actually make $1 million come flying out of the sky. But the knowledge of knowing that you finished the list is important, you know, because I feel like that's where you really get those small wins. And you've, you know, even if you only got like halfway through the list, you still feel good about being halfway done, you know, because you still got to go through the rest of the list. But just getting to that point, or sometimes, you know, it's like taking the first step is the most important, right? Like, I think that's probably something from an AA recovery meeting, but, you know, the first step is admitting you have a problem, right? But that could be the biggest step, because you're stepping in the right direction. You're checking off, I have a problem and I'm trying to get help. So you've acknowledged it and you're actually in the right direction. So things can take a crazy turn sometimes on this podcast, huh? Like when I start talking about, you know, recovery, but that's not what my goal was. But anyways, that's probably an excellent example. If I, you know, decide this is a good tangent to continue on, you know, but recovering from some problem, even if it's recovering from a health issue, like maybe you had surgery, you know, like maybe you had, you know, surgery on your shoulder or wrist or whatever, you know, there's going to be a level of success for, oh, I've gotten out of bed, you know, like, or I finally don't have to take pain medicine to get through the day, which is important in this day and age with the opioid crisis, because you don't want to take pain meds any longer than you have to. I like to, you know, feel pain, so I just choose to not take pain meds if I don't have to. I actually had some surgery a couple years ago. It's almost actually like now it's like 15 years ago. I had to have nasal surgery, which they screwed up still anyways, but I still had this nasal surgery and I was in pain and I took some pain meds and I totally was out of my mind. Like, I don't even remember. Like, I ended up like losing like 2 days where I really don't remember. The only thing I remember is I was reading the Da Vinci Code and I just, like, I could remember that pretty vividly. It's almost like I took some kind of special pill that made me focus on one thing and only one thing. And the only thing I could remember that happened was pretty much, I was, the Langdon character, like, you know, trying to find the what the heck was it called? The chalice or whatever the thing that he was trying to find, which I'm drawing a blank, but I know that it was like the female Mary Magdalene something or whatever, like the Ark of the Covenant, whatever he was trying to find. I think I just went into a tangent inside of a tangent inside of a tangent. Like, I feel like at this point I'm breaking the time space continuum and I'm about to go into a parallel dimension. So I'm going to take a break for a minute and regather my thoughts. Okay, I played with some dinosaurs, and I'm back because I went back in time and then came forward, if you didn't get that. But well, I did say I was going to another dimension. All right, so I found my other self in another dimension where I was super successful, and I asked how he got super successful, and then I came back, and I've got the secrets. There, that's better. Okay, so lists. Speaking of lists, I got some lists that I'm going to read off from the interwebs, because the interwebs are great. But Bill Gates has some lessons of success, and I think these are good ones to follow. So, you know, he says start as early as possible, which generally means, you know, start when you're young, but that's not always an opportunity. Sometimes you may not actually be, you know, comfortable in life, like financially complacent enough to actually be able to do extracurricular things. And if you don't have the proper mettle, you know, to really take on starting your own business or something like that, you know, it may not be until you're like 40s that you decide to, you know, become an entrepreneur. But you've always had that entrepreneurial spirit, let's just say. So that being said, he basically puts emphasis on networking. You know, he says, you know, enter into partnerships, but that's really networking, you know, building up your network of contacts and people that you could, you know, maybe barter services with. You know, it's probably always good to have some kind of lawyer friend. So you should find a lawyer friend, you know, an accountant, probably a good contact to have. And maybe a salesperson. I don't know, whatever your product might be. But, you know, knowing a sales guy is never a bad idea. If you're the, you know, the creator of the product, you know, maybe you're physically building the product, you know, via the internet, like you're coding it, or maybe you're physically creating t-shirts or whatever, you know, going back to my t-shirt example from my other business-related episodes, entrepreneurial-related episodes. He definitely emphasizes that you can't just expect to be successful right out of the gate. You know, so you can't just think that it's going to take 3 months to be up and running. Granted, if you had some money saved up and you were able to jump into some kind of lucrative franchise, maybe you could actually become successful in 3 months because a lot of legwork is done. But you're not going to be necessarily as successful as if you started from the ground up and then, you know, worked for like 5 years and sold your company for $2 billion. But, you know, you might get enough success where you could get a franchise going and, you know, be basically working for yourself, being your own boss, and kind of getting up and running and having a steady, decent income. You know, I don't know how I feel about franchises. I feel like in order for franchisees to truly be successful, they need to have multiple franchises. You know, Dunkin' Donuts is a popular franchise, or Subway, popular franchise. I feel like the guys who are really making the money have at least three. That's just my opinion of it, and based off of conversations I've had with other people, with, you know, talking to somebody about how franchises work and then how you could be successful with it. If you actually started a restaurant and then created the franchise model yourself, that's a different story, because that's where you could then become very lucrative. You know, it could become very lucrative because you can really make a lot of money off of selling franchise rights, essentially. And you're basically, franchisers are collecting some kind of, you know, regular annual, monthly, whatever fee from the franchisees on, because, you know, they're buying the rights to the name, and all you're doing is providing some standards, materials, contacts, what have you. You know, maybe it's the distribution network. Anyways, so that's good. And he also says, you know, be your own boss as soon as possible. That kind of fits in that same vein, is you could do that as a franchisee, or you could do that as the restaurant owner who decides to franchise the restaurant. But That's a little, that's tricky, and it can be really scary. So you got to really, really think through, you know, what you really want to do there. You know, like what is, what do you really make a really good checklist, you know, before you start a business, essentially. But, you know, that to me is it's kind of critical of having a good business plan. And, you know, when I was in college, like I actually had to create business plans, you know, like it was like part of different classes I took, like you got to create the business plan for this product. You know, we used to have to do these mock exercises where we had a team and we had to create a business and then present that business as something viable to like a venture capitalist who's a professor, playing a venture capitalist to, you know, to get them interested in investing in your company. I love that one of his remarks about success is don't whine about your mistakes and learn from them. You know, so you can't be the type of person that's like, woe is me, nothing ever goes right, everything always sucks, life sucks. You can't be like that. If you're your own boss, you're only complaining to yourself and no one else is gonna care or hear it, you know. So you really gotta consider the fact that whining isn't gonna do you any good. So it's like, suck it up, buttercup. Move on. You got to be committed and passionate about what you're doing. You know, another investing tip from Warren Buffett is he only invests in what he knows and understands. Like, he never really invested in tech for a long time because he didn't understand it. You know, like he invested in insurance companies. You know, he's behind Geico. You know, so he understood those industries like really well. So he invested in them. You know, some other schools that thought about investing. And I think this applies to getting into your, or deciding to choose a business path. But, you know, this is highly, highly recommended is you got to do something you love. You don't want to try to start a business for something you're not going to really be passionate about, right? So you really need to consider what you're looking to do. So don't invest in something that you don't believe in. You know, if you really don't think toothpaste is worth it, I don't want to talk to you face to face. But if you really don't think that toothpaste is worth it, then don't invest in Colgate, you know, because you don't see much value in it. You're going to be the only one, and no one's going to want to talk to you face to face or be trapped in a small room or even an elevator with you. But that's your prerogative. Now, you know, if you like, I recently was noticing around my state, at least, that a ton of Cumberland farms were being built and popping up. And, you know, I didn't really care to go and invest in the Cumberland Farms. I don't even know if there's a stock for it, but the brand, but it's one of those things that made me think, if I were an investor, I would be betting on Cumberland Farms right now, because this is a sign of success and growth. Granted, sometimes if the company is growing too fast, too quick, it can be negative, you know, but it's a good sign when you see them popping up. Like Chase Bank all of a sudden has branches popping up just between my drive from my house to my work. I've seen, you know, two branches have opened, and I haven't seen Chase branches pop up ever. Like, I mean, I always thought this was just like, you know, it's Chase Manhattan or JP Morgan Chase or whatever it is. You know, it's always been just a New York City bank, and I've always thought they were in cities. So wouldn't be surprised to see one in Hartford, Connecticut, but I was surprised to see one in wherever it was. I think it was Simsbury, Connecticut, or Avon, Connecticut, so somewhere on my drive to work. And I saw that, you know, this branch popped up, and then a branch popped up, you know, in downtown Hartford that I hadn't noticed before, which seems to be a banking corner. There's the street in Hartford with a ton of banks now. There's at least like six, maybe seven. But my point is, you know, that's a good sign. If they're opening physical locations in a digital world, you know, that's a big deal. You know, Amazon, a sign of success, you know, the fact that they partnered with Kohl's was a big deal. not so much for Coles. Coles, I think, is kind of on the bad end of that deal, because now they've got to deal with handling the returns, but they're also trying to pitch or push purchasing stuff in the store, because when you make a return to a Kohl's, you actually get a printout with your tracking number, and on it, it's like you get 25% off anything you buy in the store today, kind of thing. You know, so it's like it gives you that immediate need to purchase something, like if you want to take advantage of that coupon. But again, being observant like that, like, you know, looking around for where there's a need for something, you know, like maybe there's a need for doggy daycares, you know, like there's like the ad that I recorded that you might hear during this episode somewhere about, you know, shelter pets. I'm not the only one kind of doing it. I say it's an ad, but I'm not getting paid for it. It's a charity ad that I recorded because I have a pet that I adopted, that our family adopted, and I believe in the cause. And, you know, maybe that causes a lot of other people to think about adopting a pet. And, you know, next thing you know, there's an influx of pet owners, but they work full time, both of them, you know, both the doggy mom and the doggy dad, a fur baby dad, fur baby mom, I think is the term. They both work. So maybe there's all of a sudden this need in your town for a doggy daycare, you know, not kids, but just pets, right? So maybe that's your idea, is that, you know, I'm going to start a doggy daycare because I love pets as it is. You know, I believe in the cause of pet adoption, and I don't want those pets to have to be left home alone. So I'm going to open up a doggy daycare center. You know, I just kind of think from that perspective, you never know. Like, there, you could find success in it. Now, you can do market research. You could, you know, very inexpensively just do a poll of people you know in town, and if they have pets, and if, you know, how long do they leave them home, and be like, I'm not judging, I'm just asking because I want to start, I'm thinking about starting a doggy daycare business. You know, is that something you'd even be interested in? Would you trust me? You know, would you be willing to pay whatever it is, $10 a day or something, you know? And you know, like, these are things you do, that market research, and find out if it's a viable idea. But that's part of the exercise, you know. So that to me, it would show that you're compassionate and committed and passionate about the idea. He says, as another tip, life is the best school, not university or college. I 100% back this idea. I am not doing what I went to school for, although the marketing knowledge probably has come in handy. I feel like I could have skated through school a lot cheaper if I didn't, you know, spend the amount of money that I did, and I bypassed, and I ended up, you know, essentially teaching myself the trade I learned, you know, with development on my own. I even with me going to a 2-year school, community college for 2 years, even going to that 2-year school first and then going to the 4-year school, it still ended up costing a ton of money. And I mean, my biggest regret is not getting financial aid or financial aid advice from somebody outside of the school, which I would highly recommend anybody do, because I just didn't know. I didn't know better. And I got bad interest rates and bad deals, essentially. And this is something that's affected me outside, you know, after school. So that's a pretty big deal. Now, I don't think you can easily just go out and I'm not going to be able to walk up to Bill Gates and be like, hey, can I shadow you and be your intern? I mean, you could ask. Maybe he'd say yes, but not likely, you know. But it's not like you can just easily go out and get life experience, is my point. So you have to balance that concept. of course, I think it's easy for him to say, and it's kind of easy for me to try to say it, because that was my circumstance of you know, going to college, getting out of college. It just really got me my first job, which then told me I didn't want to do what I went to school for, and then, you know, taught myself a different way to get through life or get a career. But that's not everyone's circumstance. Of course, you can't become a doctor from life experience. So there is that. But, you know, Bill Gates, obviously, computer nerd guy, like tech industry, most of the tech people can, you know, attribute in some way that they dropped out of school as that leading to their success or something like that, you know, which is kind of funny because, well, not really funny. It's kind of sad to think that so many college dropouts are like billionaires. But anyways, I digress. Life is a good school. It's not the only way, because I think you need to do stuff personally to grow your knowledge. You know, that's why I'm a big advocate for just trying, you know, trying to read as much as you can about whatever it is. So the other list that I was looking at, I think, is a better approach. Because the first thing on that list about becoming successful is read about your industry. And I think that's key. You know, where you want to go, you know, you need to become more knowledgeable about that place, you know, like whatever it is, the industry, career path. You know, if you want to become a franchisee, you know, of a Subway, you gotta learn about sandwiches. You know, it's kind of tongue in cheek, but in all seriousness, you need to learn about the sandwich industry, you know, if you want to become successful to some degree, because Subway kind of highly restricts what you can do outside the box. You got to stick to a certain thing. Probably a bad example, because I actually think Subway's like gone way downhill in the past like 10 years. Like, I think it used to be a lot better. Now it's like tightly controlled. You can only have 3 olives, and extra means 5 olives, which annoys the heck out of me. But you got to do the research. I mean, you want to know what's the population of the town? What's the amount of traffic that you're going to see to this plaza that you're looking at putting a Subway in? You know, there's basic things. That's research, you know. You got to look at that stuff. One last thing from Bill Gates that I want to emphasize is be nice to nerds. In general, that'll get you places, especially if your idea involves making some kind of website or app, because you definitely want a nerd friend to help you. You know, I am a nerd, and I'm not afraid to say it. My wife got me a Tech Ninja button that for Christmas that I can wear and say that I own that Tech Ninja, mainly because, as I've said before, I am, you know, tech support for the family, and it is what it is. So let's see what else in the list. Keep a daily journal. So I had made my own list, and my own list was, you know, set goals and write down ideas. You know, I guess in a journal would make sense. You know, but my thought was, you know, a lot of times I've heard people say that this isn't on any of the lists I'm looking at, but I've heard people say that, you know, keeping a pen and paper next to your bed is a good idea, because you could wake up in the middle of the night with a brilliant idea, and if you don't write it down, you're going to forget about it, and you're going to regret that for the rest of your life. I think there is something to be said about that. I don't know if you necessarily can do that, but hey, you know what? In the middle of the night last night, I got up and I made a list about what I was going to talk about in this episode. And, you know, that was just because I had a couple ideas and it happened to strike me at midnight. So there is something to be said about that, you know? I mean, maybe your best inspiration comes from a dream. Who knows? But keeping that list, you know, sometimes it's, again, that last episode I talked about brainstorming, you know, and that stream of consciousness exercise, that is a good way to drum up ideas. But it's not just because you're doing some kind of silly activity. It's because you're focusing your mind on something and you're saying, hey, I'm gonna try to think about this and only this and see what my mind could come up with to help me be successful with whatever I'm trying to do, you know? So if you're trying to make a list while the TV is on, not going to be as successful. In fact, if you try to do anything productive with the TV on, you're not going to be that successful, you know, because somehow I feel like that stuff slips into your thoughts and sometimes could even influence what you're trying to do, you know, in a negative way, I think, you know. So you might end up writing down like a note that has nothing to do with real life and it has to do with like trying to help a fictitious character. I don't know. But that's, you know, to me, it's like another list is to unplug without a device on the list or you know, these are habits that come from Inc.com. And I definitely subscribe to that idea, but I think it's really very hard, especially I think I've mentioned this before. Like if everything you do is within your phone, like from, a business perspective, like you need to respond to emails from clients. I think it's a good idea to unplug. I like the idea of, you know, basically I put a do not disturb mode on my phone. So it kicks in at like 10 PM. I like the idea of having a set time where I basically don't look at the phone anymore as much as I can. It sometimes is hard. And it's crazy to think that we're in that kind of world before because, or this world now, because before, like 10 years ago, this really wasn't an issue. Maybe it was longer than that, 20 years ago. I don't know. Whenever the heck. Yeah, because we're at the end of a decade. It's like, I feel like you could pinpoint it back to like 2005, maybe 2003. I mean, I remember having a cell phone in like 1999. It was like a really old school one and it didn't really work. I mean, like I had pagers. People were always like, what are you, a doctor or a drug dealer? And it's like, you put those two in the same category? You put doctor and drug dealer on the same level of importance? Like, that's silly. But I just had a pager so I could look cool and I could write hello with like 43770 or something like that. Or, you know, just like you do on a calculator, maybe some other things. You might have an inappropriate thing that you might write in a beeper message. Anyways, you know, these tangents, they can consume your life. What was I saying? Oh, so, yes. As I look at my device, as I look at my phone, at the list I made, it reminded me that I talked about unplugging from your device. But, you know, that I think can be important. Now, for me, unplugging from my device is picking up the Kindle, which is a device, but I'm strictly using the Kindle for reading because that's the only real feature. That's all you can do. You can't surf the internet, get email. I like having a Kindle. I mean, I've gotten back in the habit of reading physical books too because that's even further disconnecting yourself. Because when I'm picking up the book and I'm reading the book, like I'm not looking at my device and I'm not thinking about my device and thinking about what I'm reading. I think it's a good exercise. I'd recommend at least having one physical book that you have. You know, because I like to have a couple books going at a time. I think having one physical book, like, you know, that you have around you or whatever, around the house, is a good idea. Because I think that's an ultimate way to kind of focus and clear your mind and just think about whatever you're reading. So I think that's good. Another thing on the list, check your pride at the door. You definitely have to accept that you're not going to be the smartest person in the room. You're not going to know everything. You're not going to always look great. You know, you're going to have to swallow your pride in order to be successful. You know, like sometimes you just got to go, okay, this person is an idiot, but I can't do anything about it right now. And so I'm just going to be like, okay, if that's what you want to do, sure, let's do that. And hope by some miracle that, you know, eventually that it gets found out that they're idiots, and you can actually, you know, continue on with your life. But sometimes you just got to, you know, check that pride at the door. You can't give up. You really can't, you know, you can't actually be successful if you give up. So that's pretty self-explanatory. Another list that I saw of, you know, really I'm just searching for tips for success from successful people, or tips on how to be success from Bill Gates or Elon Musk or Warren Buffett, or, you know, just look at really wealthy people and like, what did they do? You know, there's some school of thought about, you know, this other list I'm looking at is like, rise early. You know, if you wake up early, you're going to be more successful. I don't know about that, but that's coming from somebody who doesn't really like to wake up too early. Granted, I'm up at 6:30 because I got to get up for work. I don't think that's early enough. Like, I remember, I think in one of the Jim Cramer's books, he talks about he gets up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and he reads the international newspapers or stock reports or something like that. Or he used to, at least. He used to subscribe to some of those newspapers that came from like overseas, which kind of blows my mind how they could even, like, I mean, thinking like 20 years ago or 30 years ago, how they could even get like London Times newspaper over here. Like, there's got to be like a teleportation device or something for newspaper. Well, I guess you could fax it. Anyways, it just blows my mind to think that stuff could kind of travel so quickly and be at your doorstep at, you know, whatever time, like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Anyways, but getting up early, but that, to me, it's just like, well, then you got to go to bed early, right? Because you got to get at least your, you know, the other school of thought is you got to get at least 8 hours of sleep, right? That's what they say, 7-8 hours of sleep. So aren't you just kind of trading what time of day you're working? Like, you know, because you still got to get your 8 hours somewhere. So you're going to bed at 8 o'clock at night, you know, to get up at that time, or 7 o'clock or whatever, you know, is that really... I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily buy that. I could understand that rule of thinking. If you were like on Wall Street and all the other people that were like making deals and taking names are getting up early and that's the time to network, then hey, then you got to do what you got to do, right? But in this internet age, I don't necessarily think that's always the case, or the best option to be successful. I used to do my best work at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, if I was writing code, I feel like that's when I all of a sudden would be the most inspired and the most productive, is like all of a sudden I'd get like 1 o'clock in the morning. Part of it was like, I was like in a zone. I was like overtired. And I was also thinking, I want to finish this so I can go to sleep. And my brain just started working differently. And that's when I would, like, you know, be able to complete a lot of code and actually get stuff, I feel like, over the edge and finish up complete like components of whatever the heck I was building. So maybe, I don't know. You know, I think a lot of other things, like take action, have a positive attitude, take care of yourself, you know, like have good personal hygiene. I mean, I think getting up in the morning, like if you live alone, you know, if you get up and you have breakfast and you take a shower and you go outside and you have a routine, you know, it's better. Like, let's just say you're out of work and you're alone. Like, if you just laid on the couch nonstop and ate pizza, chips, watch TV, you didn't do anything. Like, if you don't do anything, nothing is going to happen, you know? Like, and there was times, like, when I was out of work before I went back to college, because I was working in the restaurant business and I, for one reason or another, had to leave a job. And, you know, there'd be these brief periods of time where I was out of work for like 2 weeks. I think the longest was like a month. And, you know, the days would just kind of blend together because, you know, it started off where I'd be like, yay, I'm not working. I'm going to stay up really late and I'm going to sleep in. And, you know, stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and sleep till 2 o'clock in the afternoon and, you know, do dumb things like that. But then after a couple of days, it's like, now I'm really like feeling like a piece of crap and I'm not being productive. And then, you know, then it's like, well, I got to get out and do stuff. But I've gotten into this bad routine where I'm going to bed late still and waking up late. And when I'm going out to try to do interviews, I'm like, it's like the wrong time of day to try to go and talk to somebody and get an interview. And anyways, like, you know, it wasn't until I shifted back into my normal routine, which was, you know, going to bed by 10 or 11, you know, try to get to bed by 11, getting up at like 8, you know, making sure I was up out of bed, take a shower, leave the house, go do something productive, go to the library, you know, like meet a friend for lunch, whatever, you know, like just basically reacclimating to society and stop being this night owl, you know. That's when I was able to kind of get back on track and get my head right to move towards my goals, you know. So I think that's important. I think just they call it, you know, personal care is what's kind of listed here. This is 10 Habits of Successful People from Investopedia. And, you know, I think collectively all these sites are all kind of saying very similar things. There's nothing in here that's like mind-blowing that you're going to go, oh my gosh, that was the thing I was missing. You know, like if I just brushed my teeth, I'd be successful, you know? I mean, I think that's key. You don't want to have, you know, funky breath, but yeah, that's not the secret, you know? To me, like, and I said I was going to give you the secret. To me, the secret is really having a well-thought-out approach to how you're going to accomplish the little things that are going to build on each other to become, you know, the success factors in becoming, you know, ultimately successful in general and reaching that bigger goal that you want. To me, the secret is really like building on your little successes, you know, and acknowledging them as little wins, because I think it all has to do with how, you know, if you don't feel like you're successful, you're not going to really move anywhere. You know, if you think that the only thing that's going to make me happy and successful is doing this, which is, you know, X or Y, and unless I do X or Y, I'm not successful and therefore I'm not happy, then you're just going to be disappointed for a really long time, because a lot of times you can't just go to X or Y, you know, like you got to work towards it, you know? So you got to kind of start off, you know, if you have a dream of, you know, writing a screenplay or something like that, you know, you got to start out by writing the first lines, you know, coming up with a title is a step in the right direction, but then creating that first page of the script, you know, like getting that done is a success. You successfully wrote the first page of your screenplay that's going to wow the world, you know, or, you know, you want to start, you want to go back to school, right? Like getting the research done of which school you want to go to or what you want to study and figuring that out and checking that checkbox is a success. And I think that's what I'm really trying to push for is what you need to do in order to be successful is you need to acknowledge that you have had successes along the way. Because once you start to feel good about those things, it's going to just help drive you towards that ultimate goal. And you also have to look at it as like, you know, these little successes might not necessarily be the bigger end goal, but they are successes and they're things that you can be proud of. You know, it could, I know like with the screenplay, it's kind of like, well, I didn't get it made into a screenplay, but you wrote a screenplay and maybe you made contacts with that screenplay and they told you that's not going to sell because, you know, it's about pink elephants. And, you know, right now it's not in vogue. It's not popular, you know, like right now they want vampire elephants. Vampire elephants are what's big. And that had just keyed you into what your next step is. And so you go write a screenplay about vampire elephants, and that gets picked up and made into a featured film. You know, it's I don't know, a weird thing, vampire elephants, but maybe, you never know. Who knows? It could be successful. Somebody out there might just take this idea and go try to make a movie about vampire elephants. But my point is, you don't know until you try, is an age-old adage, right? So you kind of got to get it. You just got to put yourself out there, right? And so, like, you get to that point where you can actually feel like you've had a success, you know, and maybe you didn't actually exactly get to the end point that you were looking to get to, but it turned into a stepping stone, you know. Like when I first went back to school and decided, you know, I did not want to work in the restaurant business the rest of my life, it needed to be considered a stepping stone. That's when, you know, I was able to focus my attention on school. And so I started making changes. I altered my schedule. I was able to make it so that I could only, you know, I'd only work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, really long days, but I had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday that I could take classes. And, you know, that was like a first step. And then I figured out, oh, okay, I'm going to take some general classes. What am I kind of interested in? I was always kind of interested in like business stuff. So I'm like, I'm going to take a marketing class because it's in business, related to business. So I did that. And then, you know, the other class I took was like advertising, I think, or something like that. Whatever it was, I took two classes to start and I started down a path. I had a counselor that I, you know, consulted with about what my educational goals were going to be. And she helped me kind of figure out what I wanted to do, you know, in terms of building a curriculum and a game plan. And because I was only taking two classes a semester, it meant that I was going to have to basically do this 2-year school for like 4 years. But, you know, eventually I was able to take four classes at a time. But I started off where it was kind of like, all right, I'll take two this semester, and I'll take two next semester. And then I was like, okay, now I've got an idea as to what I want to do. So next semester, I got four classes, you know, then four classes, and took some summer classes just to knock the stuff out so that I could get my 2-year degree under my belt and then have enough credits to transfer to a 4-year school. So, you know, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I started. So, like, you know, to me, it's important to just start. Just if you're thinking about it, just like kind of, you got to take that first step. And to me, it was a success, you know, getting through that first semester. Success, you know, coming up with a game plan with a counselor was a success. Not that I completed it at that point, but it was still a success to get that far and have a game plan. And then I could actually feel comfortable knowing that I was going in the right direction, because it wasn't necessarily that I actually completed something. I just was working towards something. And I mean, look at it. If you look at it from my perspective, where I did all these steps and I ended up, you know, finishing college, getting a degree in something, and that was considered a success. It still, to me, didn't feel like the success I wanted, because after I was done, I was like, oh man, I don't want to be in this role, a marketing role. I don't even want to do this, you know, for the rest of my life. I want to build websites and apps and be in the tech industry and be in IT. And I was completely not in that direction, but it was still a success that I could look at. Like, I finished college, right? So that's a success. And so, you know, I got to that point. As much as it pains me to think I spent all that money on something that ultimately I only needed to get my foot in the door. You know, I understand that a lot of companies just don't even look at you without a degree, but I could have gotten a cheaper degree. I could have gone to a cheaper school to get that degree. But again, my circumstance. But I have to look at it like, you know, as I still reached a successful point within those stages, you know? So I think that it's just important to recognize those small successes. And it's not much. I don't have a lot of listeners, like, but getting to 30 episodes on this podcast was a success to me. I don't know if you'll hear from me in 2020. I don't even know. I had a direction in mind for this podcast, and it didn't really match it, but it's been evolving as I've been going along, you know, so I still feel like I've reached success. So this is all said in an effort to point out to you, the listener, that you are successful even right now, because you can look back at many points in your life and see, you know, I was successful in X, Y, and Z. You know, I did successfully do blah, 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 you know, and blah, blah, blah is fun to do. I blah, blah, blah all the time, you know. Sometimes you just got to let loose and blah, blah, blah. It's just a funny saying to fill in. But, you know, I want to keep it generic. So I just want to kind of point that out, you know, that you can actually look back. And I'm sure if you don't have to think very hard, if you just think back to even that day, I made it through another day and I didn't die. That's a success. Hey. Or I made it through the holidays and I didn't kill my family. Hey, that's a success. You know, I mean, that's all I'm trying to say, because I think it's just building on successes. Constantly building on successes is what's going to make you be successful. So you're ultimately going to feel successful because you're building on successes. If that makes any sense whatsoever. You know, I hope I've successfully confused the hell out of success. It's just one of those things. I don't know how else to kind of say, just look at yourself and be proud of yourself. You should be proud of yourself for doing stuff and completing stuff and being, you know, even if it's completing like a breath, you don't have any control over it, but you did it. Congratulations. You breathed. You breathed a breath. All right. We're like well over an hour at this point, and I definitely don't want to keep talking about this, because at this point it's just kind of, you know, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse, which is just like an awful saying that I don't know who the heck thought of it, but it's just messed up, man. But, you know, like, how about I create a saying, and it's like, I'm just beating a clean rug, you know, like when you like beat the dust out of a rug. It's like, I've been beating this rug so much and it's so clean now, there's no point beating this rug anymore. So I'm beating a clean rug. That's a better saying. All right. So I'm going to be signing off for the last Finding Your Identity of the decade, which sounds like a major accomplishment, but it's just because 2019 is ending and 2020 is starting and the decade's over. But I'm just jumping on that bandwagon of everybody saying, this is the last blah, blah, blah of the decade. And it's also the last blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's the last podcast episode of Finding Our Identity of the year. And I do hope to be back next year in January with a fresh episode of Finding Your Identity. And I want to thank you for listening. And I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you look at yourself and you think, I got to the end of this episode. Success. I'm successful. And you can, you know, go have a button or t-shirt printed to commemorate that success. I'm signing off. This is Derek McKinney from 2019 and Finding Your Identity. And until next time, this is Finding Your Identity. Goodbye.